Are you a small business owner looking to scale your business and your profits? Are you looking for strategies to find balance in your life as an entrepreneur? Stay tuned while Craig Staley, founder of HG Site Design, a website design and marketing agency, shares strategies from successful small business owners, authors, and experts on how to do just that. Let's join Craig as he explores how we can all take our businesses to the next level on the Small Business School podcast.
Welcome back, everybody, to the Small Business School podcast. My guest today is Lucy Dumas of The Profitable Photographer. The Profitable Photographer is a coaching business where Lucy, who has many, many years of photography experience, coaches her clients on how to run a successful photography business. She also has a podcast with the same name, The Profitable Photographer, which I was lucky enough to make an appearance on in episode 112. And we talked about reputation management in that episode. And that's kind of how I made the connection with Lucy and invited her on the show today. You know, I think there's only maybe a small number of you probably that are own a photography business listening to the Small Business School, because, you know, it's more of a general business podcast, obviously. But the reason why I wanted to have Lucy on is because when I talked to her the first time, she really has experience choosing a target market. She was more on the high end of photographers. As you'll hear in this podcast, we talk about her getting flown to Hawaii for weddings. And actually, she has a client or a past client who is a professional golfer. And pretty much all of you will recognize his name, but I'll leave that for Lucy to tell us about. So she was really good at targeting her customers, and she has a really good sales process. And whether you're selling SEO or web design like I am, or you're selling landscaping for someone's backyard, or you're selling hot tubs, or whatever you're selling in your business, you can apply the things that Lucy's teaching today. So I think you're all going to enjoy it. The people who are photographers are really, really going to enjoy it. So without further ado, our guest today, Lucy Dumas. All right. I'd like to welcome my next guest. It's Lucy Dumas. She's the founder of The Profitable Photographer and Lucy Dumas Fine Photography, as well as the host of the podcast, The Profitable Photographer Podcast. How are you, Lucy?
I'm so good. So good. Thanks for having me on your show.
Thanks for coming on. And we actually have talked before. I was on your podcast, and that episode, I think 112, launched just recently as of this recording. So thanks for having me on your podcast as well.
Well, I'm excited for whoever it is that's listening out there in the 74 countries so far. I'm excited for them to get your wisdom. It was a great interview with you.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it. Why don't, before we get deep into stuff here, can you just give the listeners a little bit of your personal background?
Sure. So I started my photography business in 1982. I had been running a little business in the San Diego airport, doing currency exchange and selling Mutual of Omaha insurance.
Hey, I'm from Omaha.
Craig's in Omaha, so he knows. I've been in that building. And a recession hit, and the people I had a contract with wanted to reduce it. And we ended up canceling that contract to be working in the airport. And I had become addicted to photography as a hobby and a passion. And like all systems pointed to be a photographer, including I went to an interview to be at a school for holistic health. And she said, "We'd love to have you, but honestly, you light up when you talk about photography." So, you know, it just started. There was not the support that there is now for photographers and coaches and things. And I built a full-time career that was 30 plus years only photography. But I've always been a mentor. And about 7 years ago, one of my mentors posed the question, "What would you be doing if you weren't doing photography?" And I started to cry a little and said, "I'd be teaching. I'd be coaching. I'd be helping other people be successful." And she said, well, your heart's not going to be happy until you do it. And so I said yes to myself. And that month, three people came from nowhere and asked if I coached. So I took that as a yes.
That was some sort of sign it was time to make the switch, huh?
Absolutely. I always look for those divine guidance or whatever you call it, coincidences. And then like unto that, I went to a workshop on podcasting about getting on podcasts because I love sharing on other people's podcasts. And the coach just kept saying, Lucy, I think you need to have your own show. I'd be like, yeah, he just wants to sell me
his another package
program. Yeah.
Yeah.
What is it? A hammer, everything looks like a nail. So I went to a photography conference and asked a few friends, what do you think? And three times, one of them just said, yes, Lucy, yes, yes, yes. Another said, your voice in our industry in photography, there's nobody with your same voice that's been around as long, the female perspective on the business and such. And so I did hire that person to help me put my show together and 45,000 downloads in 74 countries. I'm super, super excited. And there's some worldwide ranking that said I'm in the top 2.3 out of 2.5 million, which is kind of shocks me. But anywho, so that's the long and short of it. And there are lots of business tips that non-photographers can learn on the show. Especially, I think some of my solo episodes, you can get some specific things out of that. But yeah, and I've been in this industry so long that I have a zillion wonderful, real photography friends who are pretty smart. So it's been fun to get them on my show before they retire or, you know, go to that photography studio in the sky.
Never heard of it put that way.
I've never seen it that way.
So one thing that struck me and why I was excited to have you on the podcast, I don't think we were recording when we were having this conversation, but you know, I think we were talking about, you know, families that you may have shot when the kids were young all the way through weddings. And what struck me was you were talking about, you know, maybe a particular family that flew you to Hawaii for a wedding and stuff. And that's kind of, for at least in my mind and the world I live in, that would be abnormal, you know, for me. And it kind of struck me like, okay, she's targeting a specific audience. Can you just kind of maybe talk about, you know, I know you're doing the coaching now, but talk about when you were a photographer, kind of that journey into finding your target market and how did you target those people?
Good question. In some ways, it was just natural for me, but I have had a lot of great teachers. And I learned early that I would rather be higher dollars, lower volume for my business. And part of the reason, not just because of time and money, but because I get to be of real service. I get to build relationships. I get to create that customer loyalty, get more hugs. Hugs are my favorite thing. I'm hug deprived still from COVID, not having it, just, you know, the world we've been in. So I also learned that by specializing instead of being a generalist, it was easier to grow. And the first 12 years I did weddings, and that's what I told people I did. I didn't say weddings and bar mitzvahs and seniors and kids and passports. And I was a wedding specialist. And then I transitioned to be a baby specialist. And I love babies and I used to love weddings until that moment. I still love wedding dresses, but yeah. So one of my friends over dinner during a week long conference with photographers said, Lucy, the way to get to that higher dollar level is work hard to market, learn to sell. When you're as busy as you want to be or can be, raise your prices 20%. And when you do, some people will drop out. You'll make the same money. You'll have more time to market, to improve your photography, to improve how you sell. And so every 6 months to a year, I just kept stepping up. It reminds me of the story of when a guy fell into a deep hole and how his friends got him out of it without a ladder. They just kept shoveling more dirt in there. And so then he'd step a little higher till he was at the top. And this particular client we're talking about, which is so cool because I just delivered the last senior portrait out of her six kids. We did six first communions, six senior portraits, four family portraits, and a wedding. And I would have done the Switzerland wedding, but what I would charge her to fly to Switzerland in the winter was more than her husband and the bride wanted to invest. She was down with it, but she has a wall and she has the baby pictures on the top that I didn't take of 11 by 14s. And then the first communion. And then the bottom row is the senior portraits. And I have a picture of her putting that last one on that wall in her home. So did that answer your question?
Yeah, so I think she so.
Found, yeah. Now she found me probably originally through an ad in a magazine that used to draw my ideal clients called San Diego Parent. And my ad always looked a little bit expensive. It was a lot of white space, not a lot of words, just the children and families. Sometimes I'd do a little, you know, mention this ad for $100 gift or something, but it more just looked like quality.
So did you, as you were stepping up, did you eventually hit that ceiling and realize like, okay, this is the ceiling and I can't step my pricing up any higher?
I thought that with weddings, but now that I'm a coach and I understand the world better, I realized I could have, but I needed to do some major reinvention at that point. At the time, my average wedding was about 4,000. This goes back 25 years ago. So equivalent now would probably be 8. And this acquaintance friend of mine decided to open a wedding business and his starting point was 6,500. And he only did black and white photography and you didn't even pick them. He just printed 24 8x10s and put them in a book for 6,500 when my top package was 35. And he opened a studio with black and white portraits that were like 8 feet tall. So totally like blew up the standard. And he was successful really quickly. And he's still in business 25 years later. Now he does other things, his business has evolved. So what I've learned from that in retrospect is in order to break through that ceiling, I would have needed to step up a lot of things, not my photography. I'm going to humbly say I'm a really awesome photographer.
I've seen your website. You are an awesome photographer.
Thank you. Well, I work hard on it. And every year I try to be better and more creative than the year before, just for my own satisfaction. But I would have had to also, if I had hired a coach, but there weren't really coaches around. And if I had taken a more proactive approach to my marketing and to hiring a team, I was actually really great networker with weddings. Is that the right word? Networker. Yes. So my marketing was pretty solid with weddings, but I needed to do a big reinvention. And by that time I was already kind of over that grind of weddings. So I just did the same thing with portraits. I started at the higher middle level because I already had a thriving business doing weddings. So I could afford to start out at that high-ish end with weddings. And then I just kept improving. It wasn't like wave a magic wand. But one important thing is I was already priced for profit. So a 20% raise was different than a lot of my newer colleagues are doing, like $200 to $400, what we call shoot and burn, where they do the photograph and they hand over the files. Well, that needs total reinvention for people that want to be making a full-time living.
Yeah, I think the thing people don't think about, and I'm sure you can talk to this, but you spend maybe a half hour or hour shooting those pictures with a family, but what do you spend on the backside editing all those and the work? You know, that's probably at least double that time, probably more.
Way more.
Yeah. So it's all on the backside, those hours that you're burning through.
Right. Plus, so the difference too is in the way that I structure my business, I'm like the dress designer rather than the Forever 21, where there's a lot of time in the relationship, in the customization, in building that friendship that might last 20 years. You know, those, and when digital came around, it was like suddenly I had an extra part-time job. So that was a drag because it was nice to be able to just take the film to the lab, get my slide proofs back, order the prints, you know, get them back, number them, and let them do all of that back end work. So it's even more important to be priced for profit in the digital photography age.
So one thing you kind of alluded to is you had targeted a specific magazine. I assume that maybe was a little bit higher end magazine. You know, it sounded like the ad that you put in there was a little more high end. What were some of your other lead generation tools? Was it a lot of word of mouth? Did you have some ads that really worked for you to drive leads?
So I don't recommend that people market in print now, unless it's a really clear strategy and they know their absolute ideal clients are going to be viewing them. So networking is something that, especially in that wedding world, there's lots of vendors who need referrals. There's lots of vendors that brides and grooms need. So I kind of accidentally became the queen of connecting vendors to potential brides
and florists and all that stuff.
Yeah. And other photographers when I was booked, because I only would do 3 a month by the time I got to the end, because I put so much into each one that then I would refer a colleague who would refer back to me. So that was big. And I did shows. And one of the things now when I'm coaching my clients on getting new clients is to have them do shows and do a contest and get great leads and miraculously all the right, not the right people. The applications have little clues as who might be ideal clients, and they all happen to win.
So give us a description. What's the contest and how does someone enter it?
Well, it's just a drawing. So it might be for 16 by 20 or one of 10 second place prizes. The second place prizes are a session and a credit towards prints. And so the questionnaire has some more emotional questions to it. They need to fill out their full information so people can check zip codes and person that's there, if they have a nice connection, nice conversation, and they'll put a little star by it. So it's something, you know, I'm trying to think of the people with other businesses, what might be comparable. So the core is something. So in my industry, you can't just sit there. You have to go. One of my favorite Far Side cartoons, you know, the Far Side? Mm-hmm. Gary Larson loved buzzards for some reason. And, you know, buzzards, they find things that are no longer living to eat. And these two buzzards are sitting on a scraggly tree branch looking over a field of wildebeests that are grazing. And one of them says, "Patience, hell, I'm going to go kill something." And so in small business, especially, we can't just get a website and a Facebook page and sit there. We have to go gently kill something.
Yeah.
So let's see. The moral of that story was, So I know Facebook for my industry, people are using Facebook ads with like model calls and different things. And the key is once we get a likely prospect, then that's when my superpower, you know, is selling. That's when that comes in, which is to to build a relationship with them and go through the steps that it takes to inspire somebody to want what I offer. The little umbrella when I'm coaching and teaching, that somebody else coined this term, but when I read it, it was like, bingo, is to become the trusted advisor. And so like I bought a latex bed, and there happened to be three stores in town, and they're just like the three bears. There was good, better, best. And the one that, and their pricing was pretty comparable, but the one that I felt like she cared about me and she was listening to me and she was knowledgeable, and they were willing to keep, because these latex beds, you get different layers and it makes different comfort levels. And they were willing to come back and do swaps and like their ultimate service, and their branding was perfect. Modern, clean, open, kind of like I said with my ad in the Parent magazine, a lot of white space. There's a light on each bed. So it was sort of like, And mostly it was that friendly hello and that time with me and learning my name and learning my needs. And I think any small business, probably any large business as well, people need to feel like they're cared about, that their needs are important, and that the person selling them is knowledgeable and will customize the recommendations for things that we don't know. Does that make sense?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, there's probably a small percentage of my listeners that are interested in photography and photography business, but there's a large percentage of my listeners, whether they're a landscaping company or a remodeler or a website designer or whatever the case might be, they're selling to their customers. They might be selling a high dollar item, but even if they are selling a lower dollar item, I think there's probably a lot of tips that they can take away from you. So if you could just kind of give us an overview of, you have that lead now and you're meeting with that lead and you're going to do a wedding, let's say, what was kind of your process for helping out that client and selling them on your packages or whatever you had to offer?
Sure. So before I deep dive into that, I just thought about my person that cleans my carpets. And it's a perfect example. Now, they could be better at some of their own like customer retention activities, but from the start, I felt important, and I have allergies to fragrance and was looking for a company that would not just throw on some stinky stuff and pretend they didn't do it. And over, I don't know, maybe it's been 10, 12, 15 years now, I get the same person and I feel important to him and we've become friends. And if like sometimes the entries don't get as clean just because I have a light carpet, and they'll uncomplainingly come back and enlighten that. And the last time while they were there, then he just kind of went over the carpet again, just because, you know, for no charge. So
yeah.
So the core of why I am very loyal and never look for anybody else and would be heartbroken if Reggie, the one that comes over, wasn't working for them anymore, or there was another company, I can't remember what it was, that I loved to use for something else. Oh, pest control. And they sold to a different company and it was an entirely different business model. So anyway, it's that feeling important and then doing a great job. So let's see. So your question was the steps. Okay. So I've been broken down. And in the initial phone call, when I get a lead, I contact the client and the lead. And the first thing I do is just some light. Hi, how are you? How's your day going? What's the weather like? How'd you hear about me? So we have those icebreakers. Just like if you walk into a store and somebody says hello to you in a way that doesn't feel like, you know, they're jumping down your throat, but genuinely glad you're there. And then I start asking questions that start connecting them to the reason they're contacting me. So if it's a family portrait, with and mostly kids. I start asking them about their children, about the relationship. If it's a wedding, I might ask things like, you know, when did you know this was the moment that, or when did you know that this was the person you wanted to spend the rest of your life with? Or, you know, where we get, because photography, but probably everything, if we get down to it, is an emotional purchase. And so I'm connecting them and listening. And the thing is, people like people who ask questions about them. I was at a conference once and I was at a table with photographers and we were all talking about the usual stuff. And this at lunch, and this one woman started asking me about me. And she's the only person I remember at any convention I've ever been to in the convention room where you're eating those bad burgers in the back of the room. She's the only person I remember. And it's because she wanted to know about me, genuinely, not about my photography, but about me. So, okay. So you take it personal, listen, and then I share about the experience, what they can expect, what the background is, what the benefits are. I might tell a success story. And then at that point, I share a little about the investment, check in and see if that works. And then we set up a longer conversation.
So that first one is just kind of an initial phone call to kind of get an idea of where they're at, make sure it's kind of a compatible relationship. And then you're going to have a larger discussion at another time.
Right, right. And not get deep into left brain numbers and sizes and things like that. But with any sales, people buy from emotion. People buy from what they perceive they're going to feel like once they have that. And so helping people feel comfortable with me and knowing that I care about them and that there's a point at which they surrender to my leadership. And I think every good salesperson, that's the core, that's the point you want to get to, where they trust, you know, it's the know, like, and trust. Everybody says that, but there's kind of a deeper level of that. They don't trust you. They don't only trust you. They lean in and relax and let you guide them.
Yeah. And I think that probably is applicable to almost every business.
Absolutely.
Because, you know, I've been in scenarios early on where I've been hired to build a website and I've got more than 10 years experience in major e-commerce and website design and different things. And they're telling me, no, let's put this here. Let's put that there. And you have to kind of bring them back and say, okay, here's the reason why we're doing this.
Right.
You know, and I'm sure you've been involved in a wedding before. Like, well, should we just put this person here? And what if we turn that, you know, I'm sure the mother of the bride has taken over once or twice before.
Yeah. There's reasons why I retired from weddings and not some of it. One of the saddest experiences that actually taught me a lot was a woman that filled out a timeline 15 minutes at a time. And what she, you know, this may have nothing to do with this conversation, but what she missed out on was all the lovely surprises that happen at weddings that you don't plan. And she also missed out on some of my, so when I am photographing, I might have a checklist, but I'm also deeply in my creativity and I'll think of things that I've never done before. I'm always looking for that something that satisfies the itch of an artist. Never said that term before either. Good book title, The Itch of an Artist.
You have to write that down.
Yeah. So, you know, that's where now when somebody's that unable to lean in and trust, I generally won't work for someone who is like that. Now, I definitely am always open to input. And the relationship, one of my best clients has been Phil Mickelson's family, the golfer.
Oh, yeah.
They had me do family portraits for about 8 years and birthday parties and some different things. And she would have all these wonderful ideas and they weren't always workable just because of lighting and such, but it would inspire something else and me. And so it was very collaborative. And I did, honestly, for those 8 years, some of my best work ever, because we were partners. So, you know, I'm not suggesting that when, as business owners, we're dictating to our clients, that we're also listening. We're serving a need. And first we have to find that need. And the clients, like with photography, clients often don't know that they need wall portraits for their home. They don't realize that that's going to make their kids feel more loved. That's going to make them remember that those brats that are driving them crazy are actually angels. You know, when someone passes on, it's a comfort. I have portraits of my mom and dad in their 70s, and mom's 97 and dad's gone, but I always have them with me. And so as a professional, I know a guy had a mechanic that would tell me what I was going to need soon. Every time, you know, he did whatever was the latest service, he would say, well, I notice your brakes still have a little time on those, but you want to think about next time we do a service, taking care of that. So it all, one of my coaching clients had a revelation, and she's been around a long time. She's studied with different teachers in my industry, and she put on my private Facebook group, it just dawned on me that the reason I was afraid to sell is because these teachers were making it about something you have to force down somebody's throat, when it's about listening and serving. And so any person in business that comes from that place of service is still getting paid well. You know, I've got no issue with somebody writing me a check for $30,000. I'm good with that. Why not? But boy, I've given a lot of service for that $30,000. I've given a lot of myself. So, yeah.
So once you've kind of broke the ice with them, you've kind of established yourself as hopefully the leader in the relationship, and now it's time to have that larger discussion. What's kind of next? Where do you go from there?
The larger discussion about hiring?
From a sales perspective. So you kind of got through that initial call, and you've kind of broken the ice. And then once you have that larger discussion about working together, what do you usually wrap into that phone call or in-person meeting?
So as much as possible, and pre-COVID, it was always in person.
Yeah.
Unless they were out of state or something. So that's where I start presenting options and giving the actual guidance and showing them pricing on things and still getting them more excited about the dream of what it will be like to have your home filled with beautiful photographic art that every time you look at it, makes your heart smile. But yeah. And some of the tips, I let them know that I'm going to help them figure out the clothing and the environment and the right time of day if it's an outdoor portrait and so forth. So it's kind of a combination of the hardscape and still continuing to grow that connection and that relationship and plant seeds for purchase. That's the biggie. Is some people will just, you know, do whatever's the initial thing and then do the work and then say, here's the prices, you want to buy it. And then they're shocked that the sale is low. Whereas I've been planting those psychological seeds all the way along the line, and not like trickery, but because, so here's another core thing is I fully believe that what I do for people is extremely valuable. And so part of why I'm very enthusiastic about selling the heck out of what I do, whether it's coaching or photography or anything else, is because I know the benefits that they're going to receive from it. So that confidence is important too. Now, I will say, when I sold Mutual of Omaha Insurance, I didn't really believe it was valuable, and I still was a good salesperson because, you know, I just...
But it makes it that much easier when you do believe it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know that your coaching client's going to increase their income because you've taught them kind of the way to go. And, you know, the people that you've served as far as your photography business, like you said, they're going to have these treasures on their wall for their children's lives, and maybe their children will take them with them someday. So,
right. And their great grandchildren, great, 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 greats will see them. I have a photograph that I found at the bottom of a box when I packed up my mom's home. I think it was my dad's mom's box of photographs. Mm-hmm. And at the very bottom was a tintype. Do you know what a tintype?
No.
So those metal photographs that were very formal, and the mid to late 1800s is when that's what photography surfaces on a commercial level were these metal prints. Mm-hmm. So I found a tintype of a woman. My sister does not look like the rest of my family. And this tintype looks just like her. And it was probably from, 150 years ago, 1880, something like that. So I am eternally grateful
to have that,
to whoever it was that convinced that woman to pose for a portrait, and whoever paid for that, and then whoever kept it in the family. Because I, you know, I love family history, and I love faces. So it does help when you feel like something's important. You can hear from just what I just said how important I think portraits of people that we care about, or pets, or, you know, there might be other things. So yes, I think it's important that we believe in our product, that we, whatever it is.
So what other sales tips do you have? Do you think we covered everything as far as sales go? I mean, obviously we could go on for probably 6 hours, but anything else that you would like to share about sales?
Now, we're not in the world of marketing, because that's a whole other thing, but doing whatever it takes to create that customer loyalty is how 22 years later, might wake up and realize you photographed 20 sessions, including a wedding in Hawaii with a family, because of all of those, building the relationship, but also being good at what you do. So, yeah, I don't know. I think I just like to leave people with the, how can I be of service? Even like I have, sometimes I'll have somebody be like, I'm kind of scared to have a phone call or talk to them, or, you know, why would they go with me? And we have a conversation about a red dress. Oh, I know. When people want to go right to pricing. So I think that would be a little core thing, is to make sure that people understand value before the pricing.
So make sure that potential customer understands the value of your service before you start going into, it's going to be $8,000 or whatever the number is.
Yes. Yeah. And then, and I watch myself and my own buying habits, and I see like, hey, originally I would be willing to spend $200 on this, but now that I've learned all of the things it does, I'm just hoping it's under $2,000. But if it's 2000, if the person, this happens to me a lot with, like you might expect with being a coach, that there's a lot of coaching programs out there that are going to magically, you know, fill my calendars and make it all my dreams come true. And so if I have a, like there was a gentleman, Derek Rydell, who did a freebie, and it was, and I knew he was going to lead to an offer. And I was just hoping it was under $2,000, because I was all in within the first 10 minutes, but I wouldn't have been $5,000 or $10,000. And it turned out to be significantly yet less. And I was like, oh yeah, here.
you didn't tell him I would have paid $2,000, did you?
No, I didn't. Let's see. So the red dress story, did that come in here? Okay. Oh, so when people call and are asking directly, how much is something? I think that's one of the, people might not be old enough to know what Danger Will Robinson means. Danger Will Robinson.
I think they came out with a new version of that show. So there,
oh, did they?
Yeah.
So Netflix, was it Lost in Space?
Yep. I think Netflix came out with a new one. So there might be a few people that know it.
So in not giving pricing until the person is like on the hook and understanding the value, so many times they call and ask about pricing. Or now in my world, it's about digitals. And so I'll have a conversation where, you know, have a pretend conversation with my coaching client who's kind of stuck on wanting to give prices right away to weed out the cheap people. That's some of what they think they're doing. So I say, call up and ask me how much is a red dress. So, you know, bing, 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 how much is a red dress? And then I engage in the conversation. Thanks for calling. How'd you hear about me? Break the ice. So tell me about, is this for a special occasion? Do you have red dresses that you've loved in the past? Oh my gosh. Yeah. Being the mother of a bride at a wedding for New Year's Eve. Ah, that sounds fantastic. How do you want to feel on that day in that dress? Can you think of other occasions where you want to feel that same way? And you know, that dress is hanging in the closet. And so then that person starts imagining the dream dress of a lifetime. So that's my steps, asking those deeper emotional questions. And then I would say, well, let me tell you, you know, you might figure this already, but our work here at the dress beauty extravaganza place, I'm not thinking of a good title. We like to know our clients and we like to customize it. There's like 10 different colors of red. So what is your coloring like? Maybe, you know, and then let's set an appointment and I'll pull some dresses. Are you curvy? Like, where are you curvy? Where are you straight? What's your size? I'll pull some dresses for you and we can make an appointment and we'll help you find a red dress of your dreams. How does this all sound? So they're like, oh, a woman would just be like, that sounds great. And that's the point where I'd say, you know, the dresses can range from 150 to 5,000. You know, most people in that can find something they love in that 150 to three. Would that work for you? So by that time, the woman or man, whoever, you know, we want to be inclusive, would be like, oh my gosh, I hope I can afford it because I want to buy a dress
like that
from this woman.
Yeah.
And I know it's going to be my favorite thing. So it's that step by step, creating the desire, building the relationship, finding out about them. And then when they come in, then there's that next level of helping them. And what I hate when I'm at a store trying things on is when a saleswoman or man will be like, oh, you look great in that. You look great in that too. You look great in that. Mm, right.
Just everything's
now
great.
They're continuing. I love Nordstrom because they help you. The environment is beautiful. The branding is clear. The products are great. And they actually, like, you build a little friendship. There's a woman in my Nordstrom store that we've known each other now for 20 years. And, you know, if she walks by, you know, I say hi and she knows my name. So the service continues in anything that we're buying, a car or jewelry or plumbing or painting or anything, is continuing to help people get the quality that and the experience that everybody wants. And that's where, if I were asking the next question, I would say, what about now everybody just wants to buy stuff online?
Yeah.
Well, this is where, when you're giving that kind of service, I could have bought a latex bed online for sure. Maybe saved $500. But it's not just the thing itself. It's the experience you have purchasing it. So with any business, when you're weaving in a wonderful experience, then if it's a product, they also think of the experience and not just, hey, I like this ring, but I have a ring and I bought it from a store that like I remember fondly the experience of finding this and deciding to pick a different gemstone and have it customized. And all of that is foundational, I think, to success, especially with any small business, but I'm sure even big business. I mean, Nordstrom's is a big business.
One thing that you said that you tell me if I miss this or not, but I think it's interesting and smart how you talked about those price ranges after you have them emotionally involved, because I'm assuming that there's going to be times where someone picks up that phone and they're thinking, oh boy, I hope it's not over $2,000. And you have them bought into the experience and what will be like on their wedding day and the emotions that they'll feel and all those different things. And then you say, you know, it's going to be between $3,000 and $5,000. You know, sometimes it's three.
Does that work for you?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And they got on the phone thinking, I'm not going to go over two, but now they're so emotionally invested. All of a sudden you've, instead of dequalifying them at the beginning of the conversation by saying, you know, my packages start at $3,000. Okay, sorry, but that's not for me. Goodbye. Now they're kind of emotionally involved in you and your services and the quality and those types of things. So you may take that customer who originally didn't want to spend more than $2,000 and step them up.
Yeah, they could end up a $10,000 client.
Yeah,
for sure.
Very interesting. Well, let's change gears here a little bit, and we'll do some general business questions. What would you say is the biggest challenge that you've faced in business over your time as a photographer and a coach?
Getting work.
Yeah.
Getting that phone to ring, getting those leads.
Do you feel like there was a turning point?
It's always a work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Now with weddings, because I didn't know I was like the queen of networking, I didn't have problems getting work at a certain point because I just am naturally supportive of other people. When I got into the portrait aspect, it's not as easy to get people to pull the trigger unless they have a new baby, the baby's turning one, you know, there's a senior, high school senior, there's an anniversary, things like that. But yes, finding ways to attract ideal clients.
Interesting. What would you say has been the best moment in your business's history?
The thing I'm the most proud of is, so we had a recession in, it's like 1998, somewhere around there. And I, usually those things would just kind of, after a few months, all of a sudden work starts coming in. But I wasn't getting work. So I decided to use the time to organize all those things, personal photographs, clients, just do all the things that I wanted time for. And in the process, I began to realize I had become a fully 100% capable person to do anything I set my mind on, whatever. Photographically, you know, skill of creating things. And my heart started telling me it was time to do a personal project to help people with my work for free. Checked with my lab, checked with the camera store, asked if I could get free film and free printing if I came up with a project. I kept hearing foster children. And so I started putting feelers out and found out that there was a calendar being planned. Now, there's a series of miracles that happened in the way that we found each other, that people putting this calendar together and I, but I got to photograph for 2 years in a row, children that were ready to be, they were ready for their forever new homes, that they were not going back, you know, wherever it was. And the cool thing, it was in connection with churches in the area where each of the churches took a child or a sibling group with a commitment to try to find them a home within their community. My dad was a pastor. So I was the ideal person to be photographing these kids with these ministers because I know how to deal with those guys and a couple of women. And the calendar was put together beautifully and people at the gala that looked through it cried. because they said you could see the souls of those kids. And all the kids except three got homes. And so that, knowing that, is a so much bigger reward than anything to do with money.
Wow, that's amazing. That's great how that all worked out. It's great that you used your kind of downtime at that time where, you know, you didn't know where the next job was coming from to use your talents for someone else, which is awesome.
Now, Craig, interesting is that like 3 days after I finished that project, that's when Amy Mickelson's assistant called me. And I feel like it was, you know, I wasn't doing it for any reward other than the satisfaction of doing something. But I honestly think that it was, you know, whoever, universe, angels, something, way of saying thank you for that. Or maybe not. Maybe it's just coincidence. I don't know. But yeah. So, but just knowing those kids got homes and they're all adults now. And I hope they're having amazing lives. And yeah. So that was a high point. My other high point was when I received the Professional Photographers of America's Master Craftsman degree. And they have a big gala, and it's something that you earn both in teaching and doing service and also the quality of your work. And so professionally, that was an evening I'll never forget.
Wow, that sounds like the pinnacle of a photographer's career, pretty much.
Pretty much, yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome. Well, you've mentioned mentors already, but who do you consider a mentor and what would you say is the most important lesson they've taught you?
Who would I consider, like a particular individual?
Yeah, if you have an
individual. What makes someone a good mentor?
No, a particular individual that's made a difference in your life or business, and what's a lesson they taught you?
So there was a man, he's still around, Chuck Lewis, Charles Lewis. And he did a big like countrywide seminar series teaching us about the importance of selling wall portraits and why it's the best for our clients and it's the best for our business. And so his program, and this is why I'm so good on the phone, is I ended up buying his cassettes. Do you remember those?
Oh, yeah.
And I kept the telephone cassette in my little Volkswagen and listened to it every time I got in the car for about 6 months.
Wow.
So learning about, now I have added to that. His is a little more scripted. It wasn't so like, let's really dig in and build that emotional connection with the subjects and all of that. But that I think hugely contributed to my being able to make a living in this business is somebody passionate about creating a product that we know, as I've already shared, we know the value of it more than most of our clients do before they own them. So was there a second part to the question?
No, that's perfect. And I was just thinking about, you know, as a solo entrepreneur, you might be the best photographer in the world, but you know, there's all these other skills that we have to learn, whether it's networking or sales or whatever. And you definitely do have to practice those, because whatever your zone of genius is or your skill is or whatever, you have to be good at a number of things. Because a lot of times when you don't have a huge support staff, we wear a lot of hats.
Right. Yep. And that's where, if I could do my photography career over, I would have spent the money on coaches to help me with marketing. Because I got work, but I could have gotten a lot more steady work and had higher prices and even more, you know, if I made a good living, I could be kind of rich if I had done that.
But if only Facebook was around when you first started.
Nope, it's not the Facebook that's the thing. It's the getting out there in the world and connecting.
Yeah.
If only there were as many coaches who have the skills. So yeah, if I could do that over. And so when I started this career as a business coach with a side order of life coach, I have had mentors. I've hired quite a few. I've invested well where I was like, I'm spending that. But something told me to do it. When I look back, I realize, oh my gosh, I've had this much income, and I know that investment in this particular teacher and program was a huge part, and was like not even 1% of what I've invested have I got. Wait. So the return on investment has been like times 100, something like that. So
yeah, it was a worthwhile red dress.
Exactly. That I get to use over and over again, because education is, you get to use it forever. You pay for it once.
Yeah.
Same with photographs. You pay for them once and then you get to enjoy them every single day. So yeah, I think I answered your question, right?
Yeah, you for sure did. So before we get to the last question, where can our listeners find out more about you, more about your business? And I do think you might have a free offer as well for any photographers out there.
So LucyDumasCoaching.com, Lucy with an I, is my business website. And there's a tab that's the Profitable Photographer Podcast there, or the Profitable Photographer Podcast with Lucy Dumas is on iTunes and Twitter, and I don't know, all the
Spotify, all that stuff. Yeah.
Just LucyDumas.com is my portrait business. I have a private group, the Profitable Photographer, that people can join if they're interested. So that's where you can find me there. If you are either a photographer or a creative, where you feel like what you've heard from me could be something that just might be a nice fit of a relationship where I can help you, I am happy to have 6 of your listeners have one-on-one strategy sessions with me at no charge. And so we block off a chunk of time and we take a deep dive into your dreams, and in ways that a lot of people have never thought of before. Like, we spell it out and then we look at what are some of the things in the way. And then at that point, if someone wants to know more about what I offer, then, you know, I share that, but no pressure. And I use all of my things. I don't tell people the price right up front because I want people to know exactly what kind of relationship we can have and how I can benefit them. So yeah, sometimes I'm like, I try to break my own rules. And when I do, I'm always like, oh, I should listen to myself.
Well, awesome. Thank you. So if you could hop into a time machine and go back to the day that you started your photography business, what piece of advice would you give your past self?
Well, I didn't really understand that I'm a woman that makes things happen. Even though, like, I had some evidence, I was pretty insecure. And so I guess it would be just to trust myself and hire more support, both teachers and staff, create a team. I did join, if there's somebody starting right now, the first thing I did was I joined the Professional Photographers of America. I joined my local chapter. I joined my state chapter. I got involved. I went to conventions. I educated myself. I built friendships. I participated. I was of service. You know, I was president of my group. And yeah, So the former self, I would just those things, get more help. Don't be so much of a loner. And it was a little challenging at the time because it was a man's world. And there were some people in my community that weren't so comfortable with a strong, opinionated woman showing up. You know, here I am. So I don't know if that really impacted why I was kind of a little too much of a loner at first. But yeah, get support. That's what I would tell my younger self.
Well, great advice. Lucy, I really appreciate you, first of all, having me on your podcast. I enjoyed it. So go out there and listen to Lucy's podcast, The Profitable Photographer, and really enjoyed you having you being on my podcast today. So a lot of great value that anyone can use.
Good. Thank you so much, Craig.
Thanks for listening to the Small Business School podcast. If you like what you heard, please share it and leave a review. It would mean the world to us. If you are a small business owner or looking to start a business, join the Small Business School Facebook group. It's a private community of people focused on helping each other take their businesses to the next level. To learn more about our guest today or to be a feature guest on the Small Business School, go to craigsdaily.com/podcast for more info.